gunners and gun enthusiasts, and welcome back to this week's edition of Guns Over Texas. I'm Jeff, joined in studio as usual by our law enforcement contributor, Jason Berry.
Always a pleasure.
And CHL instructor and gun enthusiast, Gary Montgomery.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome back, gentlemen. So let's jump right into this thing today. Gary, what is new with you in your gun world this week?
Not a whole lot new. I did finally get that a couple weeks back. I mentioned that I'd inherited an older Winchester Defender 20-gauge shotgun. So I've gotten that gun cleaned up. It cleaned up rather nicely. Gorgeous old wood and really nice factory bluing that you don't see much anymore. A deep, dark bluing. Especially on a field gun. And the Winchester Defenders, for those who don't know, those guns were from the factory built as home defense shotguns. So they're 18-inch barrel, 7-round tube, don't have to put an extension on it. This one is more of a youth model or even a ladies model, so it's a little short pull, length of pull on the stock, but once I got it cleaned up, because it had a varnish on it that, you know, from sitting in a closet for 30 plus years. Mm-hmm. But when I got it cleaned up, it is buttery smooth. I'm really impressed. And, a lot of modern shotguns have an interlock on them so that if you're pulling on the slide, when you press the trigger, it doesn't automatically release. This gun automatically releases. So it's
you can slam fire it?
You can't slam fire it like an Ithaca. But the slide does release once the hammer falls, so you don't have that hang up that occasionally happens on like an 870 if you're trying to cycle the action very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I haven't had a chance to run it yet. I'm hoping to do that here in the next week or so. But it's cleaned up really nicely. I'm really impressed with it. Just really looking forward to finally getting a chance to shoot it.
Mm-hmm. Jason, how about you? What's going on with you this week?
Meh.
He's a cop, dude. It's donuts and nothing.
I was actually out doing cop type stuff this week and didn't really spend any time at the range. I had
I didn't see you on YouTube very often this week. There weren't many videos posted on Facebook, so there must not have been any surveillance going on.
There was a. Well, we'll have to discuss it.
Not let's safe say, for work.
Let's just say I've got to get here. Got to get the seats of my vehicle shampooed because the guy that got handcuffed and put in there might have been leaking a little bit when he got put in there.
Yeah. Anything like the guy that was on the stand that decided to?
No, not that bad. I will give this. There's a shout out to a citizen, an unknown citizen somewhere in Southwest Houston. I can't say the street of the air, but somewhere in Southwest Houston, when a foot chase was engaged and. Several police officers were chasing a young gentleman down the street and were not able to keep up with said young gentleman because some of us
a young gentleman that's probably from a country that they run, you know, marathons for fun.
I can't disclose anything about the suspect because that would be wrong on my part, but let's just say that fat older gentlemen in cowboy boots can't always keep up with young, svelte, skinny individuals that don't want to go to jail that day. And there's
in other words, he was almost innocent.
He was getting real close to innocent because he was pulling away pretty good. But as you're running down the street, if you yell "stop police" enough, and people down the street see that it's the police chasing someone through traffic down the middle of the road, a good Samaritan stepped out in the street and jacked, clotheslined out, bounced this dude across the pavement like you would not believe, allowing the good officers of the area to.
To close on
to show him of the error of his ways and to take him into custody. And then they were going to put him into my car, and he skid across the concrete really good.
Okay, so road rash.
Well, I'm talking to my supervisor. It's like, I didn't touch him. What do you mean? Why is he bleeding? A Samaritan stepped out of the crowd, jacked him, and then we cuffed him, you know?
I have seen this police report before.
But this one's true.
Suspect was found with numerous contusions and abrasions of unknown origin.
This one was true, because trust me, if y'all saw him compared to me, you'd say, yeah, I didn't chase him down. So, anyway, he skidded across the pavement and had plenty of, the big raspberry rashes on his knees and elbows, and I threw him in my car, and afterwards it's like, great, now there's blood all in my car. So that's the exciting story.
So you gotta hose out your car.
there is a memo right now for Mr. Car Wash needs to get there and sanitize that damn thing. So, Anyway, no good, exciting. Gun didn't even get pulled. We just did a little chasing and tackling.
So. All right. Well, you mentioned a do-it-yourself kit for the 1022.
I did indeed.
Tell me a little bit about that, because there's a lot of 1022 folks out there
that might be
looking to do something a little different.
The Ruger 1022 has been around since probably the late 1960s, and it's a wonderful, it is the 22 rifle to own if you're ever going to own a 22 rifle. Mm-hmm. It is the one with the most accessories. It's the one that's known to run most reliably. It's the one you can accurize and turn into a super tack driver or a suppressed squirrel killer, or, you know, just the all-around fun trunk gun. Over the years, it's had some different iterations, and the current one, the newest thing that Ruger came out with, was the 1022 takedown model, which is where you can hit a button and actually break it in half, where the barrel comes off the action. It not folds, but it just comes into two separate pieces, and it has a little backpack that holds it, and it's a neat little camping gun, truck gun, fishing gun. Yeah, it's a neat little package. But if I want that, I got to go buy a new gun. Or do I? Because, and I'm going to butcher the name. Is it Choate or Choate?
I think it's Choate.
Choate. C-H-O-A-T-E. Choate. 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 Choating. Whatever. You know, there's.
You said Choate.
I said Choate. Yes. Anyway, they've come out with a kit now that's a stock, and it's a couple of block adapters that basically you'd pull the barrel off the gun, which is only a couple Allen wrenches holding it on. You pull the barrel off the gun, you attach a certain block to the barrel and a certain block to the receiver, and you put it all in Choate's new stock, and you have a takedown 1022 without having to buy a whole new gun. Now, it's in the prototype phase now. They've been showing it on some internet sites and on a few of the blogs I go to, and it looks really neat. They've got several prototypes out where they're taking them apart and putting them back together, and according to the testing of that, they would fire five rounds, then take it apart and put it back together, and fire five rounds, take it apart, put it back together, fire five rounds, and they were doing this while testing for accuracy and loss of zero. And after 500 rounds, which is 100 times taking it apart and putting it back together like that, apparently they had no noticeable zero shift or loss of accuracy.
Well, that's pretty impressive, because that's not something common among takedown rifles.
It is not indeed, but that's what they're claiming. I'll believe it when I see it. But if you already have a 1022 and think that little takedown feature is neat, I think that'd be good. And they're talking about retailing it for, I think, right at $100.
Do you have any idea? Oh, well, that was
which
be
is
my question.
Yeah, which there would be the stock and the block receivers. Now, you can get a whole new takedown 1022 for about $300, I believe.
Okay,
that's about right.
Yeah, so it's. You know, do you want to have to buy a new gun, or do you just want to retrofit the one you've got? I don't know. That'll be up to you. But it's a really neat feature for backpackers, campers, hunters, somebody who just wants something that fits in a small spot. You got a little car, you just want to have a nice little takedown gun back there.
Takedown rifles, the 1022, the little Savage.
Little folder?
No, it's the one the barrel comes off and fits into the stock. And
the AR-7. Floats.
Yeah, AR-7. Mm-hmm. Those are just awesome little guns to, you know, if your family ever goes camping or you go to the river, you know, something like that, they are just so much fun. Mm-hmm. I take my 1022 takedown when we go to the Frio, you know, the Frio River. Great, awesome place. And at night, there's deer everywhere. And armadillos during the day. And those are fun.
And someone
shoot.
Who had a suppressed 22.
You're shooting armadillos?
Well, I've heard that they're fun to shoot.
Was it a movie you've seen? Anyway, the takedown 1022 is going to be neat. We'll give you, if it actually comes to market, we'll come up with a we'll put a something on our website that talks about it, because I think it's a neat little product.
Yeah, and everybody's got one.
Now, we've actually been gone since this announcement came out. We're talking about products that got announced, but we weren't here for the announcement of the Glock 43.
Yes, and you had to be under a rock to have not heard that Glock finally released the Glock 43 as a single stack 9mm.
And anybody that's just now hearing about it, don't send me a text message asking to be first on the list. I've received 793 of those text messages.
I sent that text before that came out. Thank you very much. I sent it back when the little spring came out, and I went, I know this gun is coming. Actually, I sent it to you a year ago and said, I know you saw it. I want to see
it. I've been saying it for a year. It's coming.
Yep, but they are coming, and I do want one, but I'm gonna have to hold off and wait and see, because they say dimensionally it is the same dimensions, height, and length as a Glock 26, which I already have on me. Mm-hmm. It is just thinner and flatter, and I don't know if that is the
that
size
worth losing the extra
four rounds. Yeah. I don't know at this point. I do like it. I will recommend it. I would probably like it better than the Shield, just because I'm so used to the Glock controls. And the Shield, I can't really take apart and mess with as easily as I can the Glock, because I need a drift punch and I need a little armorer's block and I need a hammer. Whereas with the Glock, I just need a paperclip that I can straighten out and I can do everything I need to do to it. So yeah. I'm going to lean towards the Glock, even though I haven't shot it. I'm going to lean towards the Glock myself in single stack over the shield, only because I know I can do everything I need to do to that gun. But that's me. You know, most people I wouldn't say, I'll say right this, don't run out and sell your shield because the new Glock came out, because the shield is still a great gun.
I'm gonna bet that there's going to be a ton of really cheap shields on the market.
And that's good, because I will take a couple of extra ones for my daughter and for my son and for other folks, you know? I mean, nothing wrong with them at all. Just because something new and shiny comes out doesn't mean your old gun is now no good.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's where the whole world of marketing works. I have to convince you that that gun you bought, that piece of iron and steel and you know, beautiful wood and stuff, somehow miraculously became obsolete because something else was manufactured.
Right.
How do I convince you of that? You know, that's the whole essence world, of
marketing. You don't need much convincing.
And that's true. It's like, you know, women with shoes.
It's definitely not like buying a new car.
No.
Yeah.
I do compare it to women and shoes because, well, you've already got a pair of black shoes. Yes, but I don't have this pair of black shoes.
That's right.
And this pair of black shoes goes with this outfit.
And not that outfit. You dumbass. You didn't know that's a pump, not a whatever. I don't know another flat, name for a woman's shoe.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're good, and guess what? You can own more than one single stack nine, and no one will complain.
Yeah, well, yes,
and you can let your buddies play with it, and nobody will complain.
Hey! What you and your buddies do when you're not at the range is of no.
I'm
not
just
of my
talking
business.
About guns. We're not talking about women.
We're not in that kind of closet, Gary. We're not in that kind of closet. Thing.
Just don't let your buddies play with it in Indiana, and I think you'll be fine.
Yes.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of new guns coming out, the Smith & Wesson 929 is what I'm excited about. This is the one that you see Jerry Michalik in the video where he shoots a balloon at 1,000 yards with a 9mm revolver. This is the one. Got one coming into the shop this week.
Eight-shot in-frame
with moon clips for the 9mm.
You know, it's kind of curious that they called it. I guess I kind of get it, but it's a weird switch for Smith & Wesson nomenclature because the 29 has always been a 44 Magnum.
And as soon as he said a 9.29, I'm like, it's a 44 Magnum that does what? He goes, shoots 9mm. And I'm like, well, that ain't a 44 Magnum. See,
and I would have called it the 9.27 because now we're still in that 3.55, 3.57.
I would agree, and the Model 27 was the old in-frame version.
Exactly. But Smith & Wesson decided 929 was a better marketing name or whatever, and so we had the 929. But it's a neat revolver. Moon clips. It's the one that Jerry Michalik famously made the 1,000-yard shot with.
Now, I do have to question. I will never question Jerry's skill, but how many shots did it take him to get that right before they filmed it?
Oh, I don't doubt that there was just a lucky... tried it thing. Holy crap, did you get that on tape? Yeah.
Yes.
That's, okay.
Can you do it again? No, I can't do it again. Because I'm thinking at 1,000 yards, knowing how we shot out at Mozunga and so forth, the front sight blade is probably 100 times wider than the actual target at 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
There has to be a little bit of luck involved in there. Just a smidge.
Well, I mean,
well, you're looking at a guy who shoots probably 10,000 rounds a week, you know.
And easily. There's still his front sight blade is at least...
Actually,
at least 20 times wider than the target.
I remember in that video, didn't he have an optical sight on her or something?
I don't know.
I'll have to look that video again.
And he might very well have. I can't say it because I remember I saw it, but I see so many
shots. He didn't
have
a scope or anything.
No, I was thinking it was like an RMR type. I was thinking it was a red dot.
Maybe.
I'll have to look again. I can't remember now.
Maybe.
Oh, well. We all know Jeff could do that shot.
Yeah, I'll do that with my support hand. So.
With your Heiser Defense Pocket AK?
Yeah. Oh, man. And speaking of new guns, we got an updated Ruger LCP, which, as we all know, the LCP is famously my least favorite, one of my least favorite
I believe
favorite
you
firearms
told us that the LCP, you said LCP stood for Little Crappy Pistol?
It's bad. Yeah, it's got a terrible trigger. It doesn't have any sights on it. You know, it's just
the slide lock is not there.
Yeah, it's just not a real usable little gun, but you can put it in your pocket, you know. And we got an updated LCP this week, and this has got the photoluminescent front sight, much like what a lot of HKs come with. Basically, you hit it with a flashlight for 2 or 3 seconds, and you get 4 or 5 hours of a charge. And then it also has that new flat, wide aluminum red trigger. And the trigger, the trigger pull has definitely been cut down. I mean, it is nowhere near as long or as heavy as the normal LCP.
Yeah. Well, you let me play with one just before we started recording here, and it is not light, but it's not bad. It's smooth, mm-hmm. breaks cleanly. Really got
no
complaints.
Not far.
Yeah. It's not a really long trigger pull. Now, we did notice that it is not a gun for me to use with both hands.
There's many guns that aren't a gun for you to use with both hands. Those of us who have human-sized fingers can actually manipulate the gun. But
yeah,
when you have an extra joint on the end of your fingers,
it was kind of interesting because I can fold my thumb down in front of the muzzle. I was shocked. So yeah, I probably won't own one of those anytime soon.
That really did get lost in your hand, man.
Fingers are like the alien face hugger.
So I got a chance to shoot the SIG P238 HD edition this past week. Their HD's been out for a while, but I haven't ever had a chance to put some rounds through one.
So is the HD compared to a regular 938?
It's 238, so it's the 380. Sorry. They don't have the HD models in the 938 yet, but when those come out, I might be interested in getting one of those, because, as we know, I'll definitely choose 9 over 380 any day. But the HD model is heavier. It's an actual stainless steel frame as opposed to an alloy frame.
Gotcha.
And so it adds a little bit of heft to the gun. And the trigger seems a lot nicer as well. It doesn't seem as gritty, and it feels like they might just have either better parts, or maybe it's actually built by a gunsmith at SIG as opposed to, an assembly line monkey throwing parts together. But it's a hell of a good feeling little gun. So if you're in the market for a $750 380, it's a hell of a little gun.
And I'm sure recoil will be greatly reduced with his
substantially
all steel.
Substantially reduced with that gun. And so it's kind of heavy when you pick it up, but it's so small. I mean, you really can't complain about the weight of that gun. If you do, you just suck.
Well, the thing about small, heavy guns, a lot of times they get a bad rap among guys that are carrying them. But, a lot of these guns are marketed very heavily towards women. Smaller, it's a single stack, smaller hands, all that jazz. And for them, the heavier gun ends up, because it's so much smaller, the extra weight ends up making it a much more pleasurable gun to shoot.
Oh, yeah.
So you think back to like the SIG 239, one of the early single stack nines that came, modern single stack nines came to the market back in the 90s. A lot of people to this day still give that gun crap, but I find that particularly among my smaller statured clients, that as far as handgun instruction go, that the 239 and guns like that, small, heavy guns, actually work very well for them.
Absolutely, and I have a 239 that has, I'm going to venture to say, around 200,000 rounds put through it. And it looks like we laid it out in the street and let semi-trucks run over it for, a week. It looks awful. It's in terrible shape, and we just can't seem to kill the thing. And it is still a popular gun, amongst people who shoot it. SIG's not putting a whole lot of them out there anymore, but it still shoots fairly well. For people who like that gun, the SIG P320 subcompact reminds me so much of the 239. It's almost like a 239, but like a column and a half instead of a single stack.
Yeah.
Pretty cool little gun. Jason, you're just giving me the stink eye over
there. But I like the 320. I don't like the 239.
I know you don't.
I just
I know you don't.
Because we had them, they were part of an issue package that came from SIG for us for 229s and 239s. And when you hold the 229 and the 239 side by side, dimensionally, they're within an eighth of an inch of each other. Same gun. Yeah. It's a little bit thinner grip. And when I say a little bit thinner, I just mean a little bit thinner. And so overall, it's like, so I get the same weight, dimension, size, and heft, but I lose five rounds. I just never saw it. It's like, that's still kind of too big for an ankle. I don't know. I just saw it as a gun looking for a place.
It's a funky gun, and it has a funky place in the market. Like I said.
That's why SIG came out with that 224, which was supposed to be their chopped down baby Glock uses the same magazine version of
the 229. And you can't give those things away.
You can't. They came too late to the party, and every other manufacturer had already done that idea, and SIG just, it's not a bad gun, but SIG just came so late to the party that the market was already kind of saturated.
I've got them on GunBroker for less than cost, and people still don't, zero bids, zero watchers.
It's a small, handy gun, but it's still rather heavy for what it is.
It is. Fat. And I can't pick it up and say, I'd much rather carry this than a 229.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, why? It's the same gun. You know, it's just a little bit shorter grip. There's not enough room for my pinky.
And then coming my other complaint for the 239, just working on all the guns, is, oh, the 229 and the 239. Oh, well, I'm missing some grip screws on this. Oh, well, the grip screws don't interchange. Yeah. Oh, well, I need a mainspring pin. Oh, the springs don't interchange. Oh, they're the exact same size slide and the same thing. Oh, the recoil springs don't interchange. Nothing swaps back and forth, even though they're dimensionally almost the same.
Well,
and I got to have a full parts kit for each one of them and a different set of tools in some cases for stuff. I just,
But I think some of that was also driven because, at the time of the 229 came out, 229s back in the day were still made in Germany, and I think they still are, at least most of them. But the 239 was one of the first SIG guns made here in the States, and so that was one of the other issues that came up.
And it's possible that was driven by the 94 Clinton ban of, oh, we'll make some single stack guns that'll sell in the U.S. because everywhere else in the world they'd say, why do you want a single stack big heavy, you know?
Right.
It is what it is, but overall, I haven't been real impressed with the 239 as a companion piece for the 229. Not at all.
So. Yeah.
Well, I don't mind it, and people seem to enjoy shooting it fairly well when compared to some other guns. Yeah, you've got a
some of our smaller statured females that we have at work really prefer the 239's grip.
Yeah.
I just look at it and go, I'm not getting anything smaller or lighter. I'm just losing ammo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Because he always wants something fat in his hands.
It's what I'm accustomed to.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, I have finally this past week, gentlemen, gotten into the bolt gun game. So I've been talking about getting a bolt gun for a long time. I was looking at the Ruger Scout, then I was looking at a Hawkeye, the American, and I ended up just finally taking that Steyr Scout that I've had for sale here for almost a year, and sent it off to have the barrel threaded and get a little Cerakote done to it, and that's going to be the next deer sled.
Now that segues into, we actually had a listener question about what to do to prep a Remington 700 for a suppressor. Since you're in the process of prepping that gun for a suppressor, all that is involved is simply threading the barrel, correct?
Yeah, but, you know, the barrel's got to come off of there, and on a Steyr, it's not going to be as simple as, you know, like a 700.
Right.
And he said, depending on what generation my gun is, he said, if it's first generation, it'll be easy. It's cool. No problem. I got it covered. If it's second gen, I'm going to have to call Steyr and get somebody on the phone who's going to tell me, you know, dude, we've got two of these wrenches in the entire frickin' building. So I believe that it is a first gen. So hopefully this is going to go pretty quickly.
Well, I wish you luck.
Yeah. So if you need your barrel threaded, call my boy Colby at Day 2 Firearms. So that's Colby Mathis at Day 2 Firearms. I don't have his number handy, but you can get him Day 2 Firearms.
Now, it's important that people don't necessarily cheap out on the threading, because if you're not concentrically threaded to the bore and you screw a suppressor on there that's about 6 or 8 inches longer and it's not perfectly lined up, we'll have bad things happen.
And it gets ugly.
It gets real ugly from there, and you blow up your gun, you blow up your suppressor, and hopefully not blow yourself up, but it is a possibility. So definitely don't cheap out on that, and don't say, I got a tap and die kit in the garage, I can thread that bad boy, because it's probably not going to work out real well for you.
Yeah. Now, you can reach Day 2 Firearms at day2firearms.com. That is day2firearms.com. And their number is 832-671-8680. So,
thank you for being fast on the Google there,
Gary. I was trying to give you boy the hookup, man.
Oh, I appreciate that. I guess I could have used the computer sitting in front of me, but
I know, but you're lazy. That's okay.
It's not that I'm lazy. I just don't have a rock here to use to, you know, operate the computer with. So, but yeah, I got that Scout. I've got a Leupold CDS coming in for it as the scope. I really want to do a Trigicon AccuPoint, but I don't have AccuPoint money at this time. So, Leupold CDS, it's going to be, it looks like. So, got that coming in. I'm really looking forward to going out and ringing the steel, you know, 700-800 yards with that thing. So, Gary, you've got a lot of 308 experience. Are you rolling your own 308 ammo? Or
right now, I'm actually using a lot of Black Hills 168 and 175s or Federal Match 168s and 175s. Depends on the gun. So, for instance, my M1A likes 168s. That's just the load that it works with. And both of those, the Black Hills and the Federal loads, in fact, almost everybody who makes a match load does a Sierra Match King bullet. That's just kind of the bullet that everybody uses. I probably could roll my own. It's just, for me, I'm not spending enough time shooting to justify doing that. When the gun out of the box is shooting a half inch at 200 yards with factory ammo, not a lot of need for me to mess around with rolling my own.
I hear you. I want to get into it, though, because, you know, my last two guns, 300 blackout and 308. Yeah. I mean, my spare money is already gone. I've got five dogs to take care of. I don't have ammo money right now.
But you're
now.
Not. Well, here's the thing about reloading, and this is what I tell everybody, that I did get into reloading because 45 got the $10 a box. So that tells you how long ago I started reloading. But you don't save money up front. You get, and what I will say is that you get more ammunition for the money you spend.
Yeah.
But again, you really have to look at it and decide whether or not, you know, for instance, I could easily convert my 1050 or 650 over to 308 because I've already got the plates for it. I just need the dies. But I just look at it in terms of whether or not I shoot enough to justify tooling up. Yeah. And just spending the time. I mean, I'll be able to crank out ammunition really fast. I mean, I can do 800 rounds an hour all day long. But is it worth it as far as setting up for it, dialing it in? Because you got to work up a load. So you got to figure out what your lead is. You know, how long would a bullet jump you got to come out of that case and all that stuff. Figure out your overall length and finding the right powder load. And I'm like, if the gun is already shooting for me. Mm-hmm. Already shooting well under MOA at 200 and 300 yards, for me it's just not worth it. But now, if I were a bench rest guy, or seriously competing in across the course for NRA high power or anything where I'm doing real long distance, and I really need to get the gun dialed in because I'm trying to get it to shoot a 6-inch group at 600 yards or better. Or even the 3-inch group, it's at 600. Now we start talking about it being worth my time. But with all the other shooting I do, I mean, I'm after that Sporting Clays match, I'm wanting to get into Sporting Clays.
Oh, tell me about it, man.
So, but if Jeff's looking at it just from, I have a 300 blackout that I want to have fun with,
yeah.
He's not worried about the grouping at 600 yards. He wants to go out and make, not noise, but make quiet
right.
With his new toy and suppressor.
Now
so just cranking out, yeah, it's yeah. just cranking out volume. But you can go online to Craigslist or something like that, and what I've seen, if you look around enough, people, you know, bit off more than they could chew. Oh, I'm going to be the next, you know, super duper home ammo producer.
Right.
And, you know, okay, I got bored with it and it sat there for 6 years and the wife's making me get rid of it. You could probably find some decent supplies online through Equipment Exchange or through Craigslist or something like that. Look around. Because you always have the old guy who died and the kids are selling everything at the estate sale and are just trying to dump it.
Yeah, there is that. Know? I'm just, now it's just a personal security issue, but I'm always a little hesitant to do the Craigslist thing.
I'm talking like estate sales and stuff like that, because you could run across a deal. But then again, the Dillon equipment is not that expensive.
Now, it's all relative, because a lot of folks go, holy crap, that's expensive. I mean, you know, if you decide to get into it, you know, Square Deal is a handgun press, but a 550 or a 650 for 308 is a progressive press. Now, because you're looking for precision, you may actually want to do something even cheaper and do a single stage like a rock chucker or something like that.
Something where I'm loading a box of ammo at a time.
Yeah, literally, literally 20 rounds at a time, as opposed to, you know,
chucking out an ammo can. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, one of y'all needs to get into it so I can buy a 300 blackout and have access to the good cheap ammo through
we
you.
Have a we've got a loader here, man. We just haven't started doing the loading yet. So
because some of us may not have access to a lot of 5.56 fresh brass.
Well,
in a movie I saw, there's a heck of a lot of it at the range left over after certain days. So,
interesting bill passing in Texas.
Yes,
SB 273. This allows for up to a $10,500 fine for illegally posted 30-06 signs on government buildings. Now, fellas, can y'all tell me, is this something that's been an issue in the past?
No, that's just it. So, it is specific to government buildings, not private property,
mm-hmm.
and. you know, $10,000 doesn't cost the city anything. I mean, and their police cars get wrecked more often than that. So I don't know that.
Yeah, but that's some transgendered, you know, dinner festival that Mayor Parker can throw for 10 grand. You know, she'd much rather spend it on something
you
like
know,
that.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, it ends up costing taxpayers money. I think the law needs to be there. You shouldn't be able to post it.
The idea is saying that we have made a state law and a local municipality can't come and override my state legislature.
But that's just it. We already have a preemption law in Texas. So, I mean, it's a neat bill. I think it's great, but I'm wondering if it's really necessary.
I'm thinking it's not necessarily necessary, but if you're in some very small community that is very anti-gun, and I'm throwing this out there, not that they are, but like we have how many little small towns here? We have Hedwig Village, Spring Valley,
all the
Village,
little villages,
all those little villages that might be I'm 3 square miles and I have nothing but little old blue haired ladies, and they get scared if they see a gun, so I'm going to put up a sign at my little municipal building. Well, you don't get to do that in your 3 square mile town. That's the only thing I can see it coming through for. If there's a really small liberal enclave, you know, maybe even Austin or something like that, if they have little ones.
I
would think that would be a gun loving area, quite frankly. But anybody who's lived in Houston for any period of time knows there's probably, 35 little individual cities inside of Houston that are totally surrounded by Houston. And it's just, oh, wow, I'm not in Houston for 3 blocks. Oh, now I'm back in Houston.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think it's more geared towards those places.
All right.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Now, you mentioned that. So by now, unless you live under a rock, you know that was it SB 17 passed the Senate, and the House version, which I'm blanking on the number, HB something, looks like it will pass. So it looks like open carry is about to be law in Texas.
Licensed open carry and campus carry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I think I'm most excited about campus carry.
I'm more excited about campus carry.
If I were in college, I'd care. I'm excited for them.
Well, I mean, as somebody who used to work, and I mean, I attended school and worked at UH downtown for 5 years. And, you know, if there was ever a time in my life that I felt I needed a gun,
downtown, that parking lot is a toilet bowl.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, we were right across the bayou from the jail, and you know, you had the
vagrants at Spaghetti Warehouse,
and then the Greyhound bus station on the other end of Main Street, where they vomited forth from TDCJ every month. And you know, I had some exciting times working at that school.
And the lovely Mrs. Berry just graduated from U of H last year. At the actual main campus, and you get around Scott and Cullen and all that.
Yeah.
You know, and there were night classes and other things. And she's a CHL holder, and she has been known to carry a gun, but there was always the issue of, I've got to go to U of H. I got to take the gun out of my purse.
And you're like,
the one place you would need it, you know, is down there.
No joke.
But fortunately, it'll hopefully pass. It looks like it's going to. As long as it gets to the governor's desk, the governor said he is going to sign it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people freaked out about it because everybody goes, you know, we'll call them Democrats, people who are against this law. Their thing is, I don't want guns in my classroom. I'm like, it's not for your high school classroom. Mm-hmm. This is for places like UH and UH downtown, UH Clear Lake, or any of the number of campuses around, or Lone Star Community College, whatever.
Where it's not people, for in the classroom, well, it's for in the line, parking lot.
No, not even that. It's for the adults that are attending those schools, 21 plus years old or working professionals, that, you know, these schools aren't in the best areas of town. They're just not.
No.
Like I said, as somebody who lived and worked, you know, in downtown for a number of years, if there was ever a time in my life that I needed a gun, it was walking, you know, the thing was, so I used to work in the academic lab, the computer lab on the 8th floor. Well, you know, late in the session, or late in the semester, you're working until midnight. You're working till midnight, and now you got to make the walk from One Main to whatever the address is, their North Main parking lot. Well, because now if you're a chick, the police department, loving chicks, they're going to walk you there or drive you there. Everybody else, you're shit out of luck.
Because you know how cops are.
Yes.
No, my biggest problem with this is somehow if I'm 21 years old, I go to my CHL class, I pass all my stuff, I do my shoot score, I get my fingerprints and everything, and they say, great, you're a good upstanding citizen, here's your CHL pass, go forth and defend yourself.
Yeah.
That's great, and I can walk around anywhere in the city of Houston, and I am perfectly competent, but somehow if I set foot across the street
right.
from point A to point B, now all of a sudden I'm a homicidal maniac who can't be trusted, and right. I'm just going to have accidental discharges or whip out my gun in class because I don't like the way somebody looked at me. And it's just the most ridiculous, bogus argument. If I can't be trusted with that gun on campus, then I shouldn't be trusted with that gun off campus.
Right.
That is the way it should be. If I'm a trustworthy person, the position I'm standing in has nothing to do with my trustworthiness.
Right.
Now, given that, there are still some places that are always going to be off limits for guns, inside of a jail, inside of the courtroom.
Yeah, even some, cops don't get to carry guns.
Yeah, there's some places that you're still not going to be able to carry guns on an airplane.
Right.
But the vast majority that somehow if I drop off my kid at their elementary school, oh, I'm going to go on a shooting spree because I pulled into the parking lot to let my kid out of the back seat or to hop the kid in the back seat. Somehow I'm crazy now. That is just absolute horse crap.
Right.
You're either competent or you're not competent. And the state of Texas has said, as long as you're not a convicted felon and you pass the little class, you're competent. Get out there and carry.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way it should be.
Yep. I agree.
All right. And fellas, I heard a naughty rumor that there is this
naughty.
Awesome piece of equipment coming out.
Uh-huh.
And before it actually hit the shelves, it was already recalled.
Oh, that would
Wait a minute. Now, you're telling me that something that would come out, the manufacturers would do all their testing and R&D, and they'd get the geared up production line, and they'd advertise it, and they'd show it at SHOT Shows and everything else, and then before it even got on the dealer's shelves, it already had enough flaws to have a full recall?
I would think that a company that would do that kind of thing to a gun would probably be the type of company that would go to the massive NRA convention or SHOT Show, the two biggest trade shows of the year, and put out their display guns with pitted and rotted and rusted barrels.
That would also Remington be R51?
No, close. I'll give you better. Okay. This would be a company who made a gun that had 90,000+ units had to be recalled because if you shook them with the safety on, they went bang.
These are police guns, by the way.
Yes.
We are, of course, talking about the Taurus Curve. So the new innovative Curve, the gun that is supposed to change the way we carry guns.
Through a curve at its manufacturer.
I'm looking around the room and it's showing you this is my shocked face. You know, I'm not shocked in the least. Y'all are not shocked in the least. And somewhere out there we have a listener that is going to be on our Facebook page going, my Taurus works great.
I put 250,000 rounds through my gun just to prove
I remember wrong. a very well-known holster manufacturer telling us before this gun came out, because he had a prototype of it, he's like, man, you'll just be amazed. And he'll go, why didn't anybody think of that before? And I'm going, all right.
So it could be revolutionary, but I would want somebody else putting out the product.
I've said it's as bad as Kel-Tec. Kel-Tec comes up with some great ideas, and you look at them on paper and go, that's a great concept, and then the execution is generally crap.
Yeah.
Kel-Tec, I'm sorry, the sub 2000 I semi-like, everything else they make I think is pretty much total crap. But they're
putting it out there. It worked well enough for George Zimmerman.
one and done.
Once.
But the Kel-Tec shotgun, anybody who's held it thinks, wow, it's really cool. And then they go out and actually shoot it, do a press check, try to do a switch from buck to slug, try to do what? And they're like, eh. And if you jam it or short stroke it, God help you getting it unjammed. So it's a great concept, rather crappy execution. There's a Why lot of that
sound
out
like
there.
Like the KSG.
It is the KSG. The same with their RFB, their Bullpup 308. You don't see those in the wild, and the ones you do see in the wild, from what I understand, work great until they don't work great, and then trying to get it unjammed with no ejection port and no way to open it up is, you're not going to do it. Yeah, I mean, it's still a two-piece injection mold piece of plastic screwed together on either side.
Yeah.
So overall, but I'll give Kel-Tec credit. They're trying to come up with something new and innovative, and a lot of people aren't doing that. And here at Taurus, they tried to come up with something new and innovative, and I will give them 100% props for that. But damn it, people, make sure it works before you put it out. Ugh.
Just a thought.
And you can hear us. We don't just do this to Taurus, because we bashed the hell out of Remington last year for doing it with the R51.
Yep.
They knew it was crap. They said it was crap. The engineers had the emails that said it was crap.
And they marketed it anyway as the ultimate concealed carry gun.
And it didn't work.
It didn't work at all, and they knew it wasn't going to work. So it's not just Taurus. We're not just picking on them. It's anybody who puts out a crap product.
Now, I didn't talk about this a few weeks ago because I didn't know at the time if the individuals who came in were friends of yours or if I needed to be polite or delicate with stuff. But you walked in one day when I was working at the front counter on a person's Taurus PT-92. And Patrick was here, but the individual was shooting it, and every few rounds they'd bring it out, and the gun had spontaneously self-disassembled to the point where it had a dead trigger. Do you recall this?
Vaguely. You know what? Well, I will say this. I've actually seen a real Beretta 92 do that. But it was an ammunition failure, not the gun.
This one, they had a squib load go off, and it was so out of battery it fired. It was, you could tell by the blown case head that it was definitely an out of battery fire that started all this.
Gotcha.
That's fine. That's not necessarily Taurus's fault, it's a little combination.
Yeah,
of
that
both.
Could be an issue of.
But what happened is, if you understand how a Beretta or a Taurus 92 series work, there's a trigger bar that's kind of external to the gun.
Correct.
And that trigger bar is held in place by grips.
Yes.
Well, when this round let loose, this out-of-battery fire let loose, it actually pushed the trigger bar out of the gun.
Yep.
And so that had a dead trigger, and it had a trigger bar hanging outside the gun, and the grips were bent out.
Yep.
And so they brought it out, and Patrick out front corrected it, pushed everything back in. The gun appeared to fire. He said, it out of battery fired. I'd make sure I was real careful and check that ammo before I did this again. Mm-hmm. Guy went in there and fired it again. It blew the gun apart a second time. But he'd fired a few rounds in between. And at that time, I'd come in and I looked at it. And we got it back together. But all I'm thinking is, how does this trigger bar have so much slop in it that with just your fingers, I can pull it out of the frame of the gun?
Right.
And that's not a design issue.
That was a manufacturing flaw
of some kind, because I could pull that trigger bar out of the gun with my bare fingers.
Right.
So I put it back together. I went in there and I fired a full magazine right-handed, no problem, and said, okay, it appears to be working. He picks it up left-handed, fires one round, trigger bar blows out the side of the gun.
Not good.
Here's the deal. When I fire it right-handed, my right hand goes around the side of the grip that holds the trigger bar in place, and the gun worked. When he fired it left-handed and there was nothing holding the upper part of the left side grip, or of the right-hand grip, the trigger bar would blow out every couple of rounds. And he's like, well, it doesn't do it very often. My daughters have been shooting it. Your daughter's right-handed? Yes. Well, there's your problem. And as I told him, he's like, well, should I send it in and get it fixed? They have a lifetime warranty. And
sure,
like I told him, I was like, man, I'd send it in, get it fixed, and as soon as you get it back, trade it in. If you want a Beretta, buy a Beretta.
Yeah.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with a Beretta except for how big they are, they run, and you can't pull the trigger bar out with your bare fingers. Okay. And anybody who says it can't be done on the Taurus, I have photos of it I didn't put up, but I think I'll probably put them up sometime this week. And you can just by pulling the trigger manage to blow the trigger bar out of it.
Yeah, it's no good.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of our listeners out there like to shoot IDPA and maybe some USPSA and such. Everybody should watch a video entitled Range Is Not Clear.
Had it on Guns Over Texas last week, did we not?
I think we did, but I'm not
sure. I didn't post it because I thought you did.
Yeah.
If you shoot on public ranges and such, you need to watch this video.
Mm-hmm.
And if you participate in USPSA or IDPA or three-gun events, you need to watch this video.
Mm-hmm.
Because the video that we're talking about has sparked so much interest and so much traffic that IDPA headquarters actually made a post about it on their Facebook page and on their website. The whole deal is, in watching this, we have a shooter. It's a double or triple blind stage, meaning that at the beginning of the stage, you cannot see downrange. And as this shooter is progressing through the stage, they come past a barricade, and all of a sudden you look up, and there's another shooter, another guy who's standing next to a target, apparently taping it at the time.
I've heard taping. I've heard he was down there picking up his brass. Yeah. I've heard two versions, but still, either one.
But the whole thing is, my personal opinion is that boils down to the RO screwing up.
Yes.
Because when we run these matches, when we do it right, and that's just my opinion, but that's a best practice, The range officer is the last person who returns to the firing line because it is his job to make sure that that range is clear before he allows the next shooter online and gives him the command to load and make ready.
Now, especially in this case, sometimes you see in pistol competition, they put up a netting
right.
that's supposed to simulate a barrier or a
correct.
Wall, and you can see through the netting.
Yes.
But there's also solid barriers on here because sometimes they have hidden targets,
right.
and sometimes the targets are, there's three targets around and one of them is the hostage.
Right.
And for each individual shooter that comes up, they'll move which one is the shoot versus no shoot so that you can't memorize of, oh, I know he's going to be the third one.
Right.
No, you're going to actually have to look which of the three is the one you're supposed to shoot.
Yeah.
So they have some blind things there for the purpose of the stage.
Right.
But in this one, you see the RO ask if the shooter's ready. He calls out his range clear and they go. And they shoot a good 15 to 50 or probably 15
he's
to 20 rounds.
At least six or seven targets by then.
And as soon as he breaks the cover, the hard cover, and you can see behind it, there's just a dude standing down there taping targets.
Yeah. He's got no clue what's going on. So, I mean,
now they have multiple bays going on here. Here's the deal. If you have bays, if you understand what that means, if you haven't shot before, they'll take bulldozers and they'll make these big U-shaped areas of dirt.
Right.
And it's called a bay. And there might be 10 of them in a row.
Right.
So you're on bay two and you finish shooting and people are down there scoring targets, but people on bay one and three are still shooting.
Right.
So your ears are still on. You're still hearing gunshots and you don't ever take off your ears.
Right.
So he might not have heard... You know, we're going hot on area two.
Right. It may not have understood
but that's,
that.
But that's why the range officer is supposed to walk down range and look around the barrier and say, I'm physically looking. Is anybody down there?
Right.
And then call
and it. And he should be the last one to come back.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, as horrid as it is to watch the video and unnerving, because, you know, all three of us have been to these matches, and I still go to these matches on a fairly regular basis. You know, I really can't see exactly how that happened or how it could happen. Mm-hmm. And it's part of the reason that, you know, the whole deal is that it occurred because of complacency.
Yes.
Is what it boils down to.
It was one of those things, I saw it and I just went, oh,
yeah.
God.
That could have been really bad.
Immediate butt pucker.
Yeah, Jeff's head's going, insurance premiums.
Yeah. So, glad the guy turned out okay. You know, it's one of those, it's a teachable moment, a lesson learned. Thankfully, nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so was there going to be any repercussions for that from IDPA headquarters?
You know, I haven't verified whether or not this was an IDPA match. I think
it might have been sanctioned. It might not have.
Yeah.
It might have been a steel match or a three-gun match from some
other body. Well, it
wasn't
steel. It was definitely USPSA or IDPA style.
Yeah.
Looking at the movement of the guy, I actually think it was a USPSA match. Mm-hmm. But I haven't heard any repercussions for that specific club. I know that it was being discussed, but I haven't heard anything for sure is actually going to happen to him.
All right. Well, did we have anything else from listeners on Facebook?
Yeah, they were asking about the new open carry that's coming up, because we discussed campus carry for a few minutes, but as far as the new open carry coming up, they're asking if it's going to be licensed open carry or open carry open
carry. And it is licensed open carry. Basically, when I saw this bill, I was surprised as SB 17, it went through the Texas Senate. I was surprised that it got through, because literally what it looked like the guy did was just take a word processing program,
mm-hmm.
and simply copy and replace the word concealed with handgun.
Yeah.
So literally it takes the existing law with respect to the subchapter H of the government code, chapter 9 of the penal code, chapter mm-hmm. 42 and 46, and replaces everywhere it says concealed handgun, it's now handgun. So it gives you, as a concealed handgun license holder, the option of carrying openly.
So now it just becomes not necessarily a concealed handgun permit, it just becomes a handgun permit.
Correct.
So it's across the board, open or concealed.
Right.
And you still had to go through the background check.
Right.
And again, the training is not to teach you how to shoot. The training is,
well,
this is the legal reasons you can and can't shoot.
Yes, but you know, one of the additions that was made, it was the Democrats tried to put 30-plus amendments on the end of this thing. But one of the ones that survived was a requirement that as an instructor, I have to teach people how to retain their firearm and make suggestions on retention holsters.
Okay.
So,
But they're not going to mandate a retention.
They are not mandating a retention holster.
And I'm kind of glad they're not mandating it, because then you get into what is their definition of retention.
Right, and it's too
easy. Is it a padlock in there?
Yeah, that's the thing. That was immediately, you know, I actually did a guest appearance over at in the rabbit hole.com which great prepper blog run by Aaron Frankel and Jason McConnell. But I did a guest spot with those guys, and that was the thing that we discussed, is if we had, if the law had a requirement for retention, then they would have to define what that was.
Uh-huh.
And it's too easy for that to become, you know, that famous holster for the Federal Flight Deck Officer Program.
With the padlock through the holster.
Padlock through the holster and the trigger bow. And I'm going, that's just asking for trouble. Because it actually has led to a negligent discharge on an
AD on a plane, yes. Yeah.
So you've got that issue. And of course, with the padlock on, what's the point of having a gun? Because now it's, you can't use it.
Yep.
So you know, I'm glad that the requirement for retention was not codified, mm-hmm. but if you're going to open carry and you're not going to use a retention holster, you're an idiot.
I would 100% agree. And even something as simple as, you know, I didn't expect to end up running down the street earlier this week chasing after somebody,
yeah.
but I did, and it's, you know... Right. It is what it is. And at the time, I was wearing my CompTac inside the waistband holster because right. this wasn't supposed to turn into a chasing people down the middle of the street kind of day, although it did turn into that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, running with a holster, even though CompTac is a good, solid holster, I had to run with my hand on the gun the whole time.
Well, to you make need sure to adjust your holster because I don't have that problem.
you get a little bit of weight going behind it. And
yeah,
I would have preferred, had I known that we were about to do stuff, I will usually put on the Safariland ALS
or something
style
like that.
Holster right. or the Bianchi carry lock holster.
Yeah.
Those are both good quality retention style holsters.
Or at
holsters.
Least, you know, here's the thing is, you know, you've got varying levels of retention. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with CompTac, there is an international, not a CompTac, but a retention version of the international several of their other holsters. It's not level 3 or anything like that. It's a simple thumb break. But for just running down the street, a thumb break will work just
thumb
fine.
Thumb break is fine, but a thumb break is not good for a grab.
Correct. If you're actually dealing with a grab, then the ALS or the SLS mm-hmm. or thumb drive and that sort of thing.
When we talk about level 1, 2, and 3, we're basically talking about how if you just have a bucket holster, as we would call them, like a nylon shell Uncle Mike's that has no shape to it or anything, I would call that level 0 because I can put the gun in the holster, turn the holster upside down, and the gun just falls out. Right out.
Yeah.
There's nothing holding it in there but gravity.
Right.
That would be a level 0.
Right.
Level 1 would be a one form of retention, whether it be the gun clicks into place
right.
or it has a snap, you know, a thumb break or something like that. But basically, I could turn the gun in the holster upside down, and the gun doesn't just fall out.
Right.
So there is at least some level of retention in there. When we start getting into level 2 retention, that requires an active something or other to get the gun out. All right. There's some type of a strap, a button. Yeah. There has to be something physically done. So it's not just not just the shape of the holster holding it in place. Something has to be done.
Yeah.
And when we get into level 3, that's when there's two active things that have to be right. done, such as I have to unsnap it and I have to rock the gun to the rear.
Right.
To get it undone, or I have to push this button while twisting in.
Yeah.
And typically police holsters, most duty holsters you see hanging outside of the belt are level 3.
Right.
The traditional level 3 that started it all was the Safariland 070 model. And on that one, you had two thumb snaps. There was one you hit with your thumb,
mm-hmm.
one you hit with your middle finger.
Yes.
And then you had to rock the gun backwards to defeat an internal locking block.
So that's almost a level 4.
That's three... Three very deliberate things you had to do, which is where they came up with the level 3 holster on
there.
All right, and nowadays most of them don't have that. Usually on most of the guns now, there's a rotating hood, which would be one level. Then there's an ALS lock underneath that hood.
Right.
So your thumb two. Is defeating both devices,
right.
but there's still two devices that have to be defeated.
Right. Yeah.
And you know what? They look hard to deal with. They look like they're going to be complicated. They look all blah, blah, blah. But like anything else, when you first get that holster out of the package, unload your gun, put it in there, strap it on, it's going to be stiff and it's going to be awkward and it's going to be ridiculously difficult.
Yeah.
You do it in dry fire, do it at home with an unloaded gun, and guess what? Just like leather breaks in on your shoes, just like anything else breaks in over time,
the device
breaks in, it gets looser, it works in a little bit, and after time, I mean, I see people out there doing nice, easy sub-1 second draws out of level 3 retention all the time.
Yeah.
It is very doable if you're willing to put the time in. And here's the
thing.
Which
is where
you
want
to put on a gun, and I want to be Mr. Bobby Badass, and cops open carry all the time. Yes, they do, with a retention holster.
Well, and here's...
Put in the time.
But you know what? It's not just the holster, though, and this is something that isn't talked about a lot, but we talk about with duty rigs. That whole duty rig, the belt, and the holster, the attachment point of the holster to the belt, is designed for strength.
It was a steel shank on the original ones. It looks like a leather holster. Those are steel-lined leather.
Yeah.
It's two pieces of leather with a sheet metal shank running down the middle of it and sheet metal wrapped around the gun inside of that leather.
Yeah.
So, again,
you could pick the cop up off the ground. You could pick the cop up
and swing him around by it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So some of the newer stuff by Safariland is simply plastic, and I don't think it's as strong as the original stuff.
Yeah.
But by the same token, it weighs significantly less.
Right.
Some of those original holsters are a pound, you know, just for the holster. Yeah.
And so you had guys, you know, you talk to old patrol doggies, they got back problems because they were carrying, you know, just the weight of the Sam Brown itself, then all the crap
that they got to carry. The holster, the stick, the ammo, the radio, the two pair of handcuffs. It does add up over time.
Yeah.
So anyway, Safariland SLS, Safariland ALS, or Safariland GLS. Safariland is the way to go and my ultimate recommendation for a retention holster. And you can get these, Jeff, you've got them here for what, $40-$45?
Yeah, something like that. They're cheap.
They're not.
And they're good holsters.
Yeah, and I'm not a fan of the Serpa, but I'd rather see you in a Serpa than an open top holster, even though I don't, you know, Serpa would be the last on my list of retention holsters. But if you have to have a retention holster and that's all you got, and you want to spend $28 at Academy instead of $38 with Jeff,
you know what? No, I'm not going to excuse that. My answer to that is, what is your life worth?
$10 more should be. Yep. Well, then you get into the thing of, well, they don't make an SLS for Bursa. Yes, that should tell you something.
That's a clue.
Safariland makes for like 100 different models of guns. If the Safariland doesn't make for your model of gun, you probably got the wrong model of gun. Yep. Just saying, you know. But that would be my thing. And the Bianchi Carry Lock series is a leather series with a...
Do they make one for a High Point 45? I'm just curious.
I know.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I haven't Google searched that.
Question yesterday twice.
Yeah.
So CompTac needs to get a High Point mold. And he'll make kicking out holsters the worst that thing cost in the world, as much as the gun.
The worst thing in the world is he'll probably make money off of it.
Could be. That's sad. There will be somebody.
Well, that's going to wrap us up this week, folks. So... What do you got, Jason?
I do want to throw a quick shout out to Tynamite. I meant to do it at the beginning of the show and I forgot to do it, but Tynamite went down and participated in a statewide Texas skills competition of some type
Internet Works.
Well, there was all kinds of skill based competition going on there. There was welding, there was car mechanics, there was debate team, there was mathematical contests, whatever. But the boy Tynamite managed to take first place in networking for the entire state of Texas.
Nothing can pick up chicks like a networking state championship title.
Point of fact, since that's my job.
tell us what a panty dropper that title is.
It affords Raptors and Mustangs. Need I say more?
And I am fully supportive of the boy, but I do have to be the proud parent moment and say the boy is out there first place in state for a computer science competition.
And he didn't even tell you about it.
Didn't want you showing up with the poster.
He's embarrassed of me.
And we discussed this beforehand that Ty is full teenage mode now, and you know, Mom and I learned about his victories from Facebook, and we're like, you couldn't tell us that, you know.
It's better than him showing up on Brazzers.com on Facebook.
And indeed it is. But we'll text him something like, hey, how's the contest going? Fine. So you join it, you're doing good?
Yeah.
And these are the texts we're getting, and then, you know, an hour later, oh, by the way, I won first place, because people are telling us on Facebook, congratulations on your son. Congratulations for what? There's my dad complaint. We're in full teenager. Ugh, Dad, do I have to tell you I did something?
17. Ugh.
Say goodbye to him for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Because
that's the funny thing, is 10 or 15 years from now, he's going to go, you know? Dad wasn't quite as stupid as I thought he was.
I'm hoping it's shorter than 10 or 15 years, but yeah, around 24 or so, I'd look at my dad and I was like, shit, he was right about everything.
Oh, man. Well, that's going to wrap us up today, folks. If we didn't get to your questions from Facebook this week, we'll get to them next week. And if you have any more, you can get us at Jeff, Gary, or Jason at GunsOverTexasRadio.com. That's going to wrap it up, folks. Shoot straight.